So how did we used to start these? Let's see. Hello, everybody. Welcome to a documentary podcast. I'm your co-host, Joshua LeBior, and I'm here with Catherine Sullivan. Catherine, how are you?
I've just been working a lot, and then now finally taking a break and prioritizing things again. And this was one of the things on the list that I wanted to get back to.
Beautiful. Yeah, so you've been doing lots of film work, right?
Yeah, I switched completely into film. So I was in South Carolina for summer and fall on a film. And then before that was in Boston. And then before that was the one in Denver. I don't know if we were still doing the podcast, if we had stopped about then, the South Park one.
We haven't done one since you've really even started working in film very much.
Yeah, so since we stopped, it's been like film nonstop, which has been great, but also kind of the reason I don't have much time anymore.
Yeah, it's funny because I've almost switched into completely to talking about film. Like I do multiple radio shows for music and about film and documentary filmmaker interviews and stuff like that. So the last few years I've been covering the True False Film Festival, a bunch of stuff here in Omaha, and still making independent one-man band movies on the side. I'm finishing up my third feature documentary I've shot completely by myself right now. So
pretty cool. I know. I feel like it's weird how like the industry you can do such different things. Like I completely had forgotten the skill set of like operating equipment because I don't do that anymore. There's teams and teams of people who do that who won't let me touch anything. So
yeah. So I mean, have you still been watching a lot of documentaries? Like what's been going on?
I haven't been watching as many. I usually every year I binge a lot during the Sundance Film Festival now that it's virtual, which I really like. I switched a lot into like narrative films. Because that was what I was working on, but also like I missed going to theaters so much. And so like, unfortunately right now, most of the films in theaters are narrative. So I hope there's this like shift in that. But I just find when working so much, it's a lot easier to sit in a theater to guarantee not falling asleep.
I get that. I've had kind of the opposite. I've spent the last few years, I'm not going to say which festivals, but I've been sitting as like in the selection committee on a few film festivals. And so like literally last year, I probably had to watch like, cause I was in the documentary category on both. I've had to watch hundreds of documentaries. Fortunately, like I've been able to see a lot of great ones, you know, and weeding through a lot of ones that I didn't particularly care for. Although I appreciate anytime somebody makes a film, and I understand a lot of hard work goes into it. So I'm not into denigrating them. Like I have a movie review show, for example, but I don't do bad reviews. If it's a movie I didn't like, I just don't cover it because I don't really want to trash other people's movies on my radio show. And I only get like 10 minutes a week. So I try to keep it posy.
That's a good idea because like regardless of the like outcome, people put so much work into it. And like being a little bit more behind the scenes, I've seen like things you can't expect, how much they change a film. Like one little piece can kind of unravel it in a way. So yeah, I used to be a harsh critic and now I'm like, no, there's a lot of people, they worked hard, they wanted it to be good. So
yeah, no one sets out to make a bad film. And unless it's like something like, if it's Dinesh D'Souza, I'll trash his films all day. Because that's a different story. Because that's just like right-wing, shitty right-wing propaganda. So fuck that guy. That's a different story. but yeah, for the most part, if the intentions are good, then, you know, I appreciate that people have made a film. I'm curious, you know, it's still pretty close to the beginning of the year. I know we're just getting into spring, you know, we're in March now. And we hadn't talked in a while. So even if it's narratives or if it's documentary or whatever, I'm just curious to hear what were some of your favorite films last year and what are some of the favorite things you've seen so far this year, if anything stands out to you.
Yeah, so I'd say Fire Love, which we're going to talk about, like was my favorite film. And then I actually made a list this year when I was in Mexico for January, and they have an incredible theater, or like national cinema in Mexico City. And so I went there like every day because it was great. Like movie tickets were like $1. But unfortunately, since I don't speak Spanish, I was limited onto what I could see because foreign films and documentaries, they would have Spanish subtitles. So I could really only see English films. Okay, so yeah, the ones I liked a lot this year, I think it's been pretty popular, but After Sun, it was one when I like watched it. I wasn't sure if I loved it, but I think that's the one I've thought back to the most since seeing it. And then also I really liked Stars at Noon. And that one was...
You picked two films I still haven't seen. Both of those are on my list. And I still have not seen them.
Stars of Noon is on Hulu or HBO.
It is. Yeah, it's on my... I have it on my watch list or whatever on there. It's funny because for me this year, you know, because I was like judging for documentary festivals and I was like covering it so much, like I missed so many of the narrative films. And those two are two of the ones that I really wanted to see that I just haven't gotten around to yet.
I would say another one, Tar, was really good. Especially when it comes to like a woman working in sort of the art industry and how, I don't know, I'm on her side at one point and other times I'm not. It's just very, I haven't seen that complex of a character that one kind of breaks apart how women kind of grow up and are formed within like a male dominated industry. But then what responsibility do they have to take? Like what, it's kind of like that nature versus nurture, or I don't know, just being self-aware.
Yeah. I mean, I think Tar for me is just one of the best films I've seen in a long time. I love that director so much. Todd Fields, Little Children when that came out was like one of those films that really like just blew my mind when it first came out, and I loved it so much and I still do. But yeah, absolutely, Tar was one of my favorite films of the year. The ones I had were I'll just quickly go through my top 10. Because I hadn't really shared this anywhere except on Instagram, because there's not really a place for it on my radio shows. But my top 10 were Cow by Andrea Arnold. I loved that film. As a longtime vegan, somebody who cares about animals, seeing a story about, seeing a documentary, a Verite documentary about a cow that literally doesn't like interview humans. You barely see humans, but yet you get like the full interior life of an animal, like through this story. That was just like a incredible film for me. And I had a really great conversation on my radio show about it, and I got to highlight it. I got All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, Laura Poitras. I loved it. Feia Dei.
I'll have to see that one still. That's been
It's amazing. It's one of those films that she takes like a political issue and makes like something with such a beautiful interior life and something that's really human, but also like is about this artist and her artwork. I mean, it's incredible the way all these stories weave together so seamlessly. I was a little bit disappointed it didn't win the Academy Award, although I guess Navalny was pretty good too. Navalny was an important subject, but I didn't think it was a particularly great film. It was a problem. I think that I felt like they were awarding like a political ideology or a political idea or something that's timely rather than awarding the best film of the year, which I think, you know, we could have that discussion all day, but, and then I loved Nope, Wrightsville, USA, We're All Going to the World's Fair, Factory to the Workers, Earth is Blue as an Orange, and Days and Nights of Demetra Kay. So I'd say my list this year was like 80% documentaries.
Those are all documentaries because I haven't seen them, unfortunately, but I've got time now. So I'm like, I got a lot of catch up.
I'll send you this list then. Yeah. But I guess we should get into our main subjects. Fire of Love is a National Geographic documentary directed by Sarah Doza about Katya and Maurice Kraft, who were volcanologists. They were married, and I would also argue were beautiful artists who like had made incredible films and took incredible photographs of volcanoes all around the world and also studied them. And then the other film is Into the Inferno by Werner Herzog, which is the first time I ever saw Maurice and Katya's footage at all was in that film. So when the trailer for Fire of Love came out, I recognized it immediately from the Herzog film. So, yeah, where do you want to start?
I liked what you said about how they're not like just volcanoists, they're artists, because that was for Fire Love, like my favorite part of it. I haven't seen like a film that's supposed to be like a scientific documentary that is that beautiful. I didn't even compare it to like normal or just general documentaries. I haven't seen one like that visually stunning. And so that's what kind of made it hard for me to judge them on like an equal playing field. I know it shouldn't be like which one's the best, but the images the two of them captured were just beautiful. And like, if you haven't seen it, it kind of looks like Wes Anderson style filming. It's two French people, like they're filming as they go. And I think they also love filming. You can see them kind of like play it up for the camera at times. And it's just so colorful, like the blues, the reds, even like the silver spacesuits that you often see on like the title pages that pop. Like it's just incredible cinematography, and then makes the story, I think, more personal because it is all their own footage.
This is Katya, and this is Maurice. Tomorrow will be their last day. They will leave behind hundreds of hours of footage, thousands of photos, and a million questions. Alone, they could only dream of volcanoes. Together, they can reach them. They meet on a blind date at a cafe. From here on out, life will only be volcanoes, volcanoes, volcanoes.
C'est très dur, deux volcanologues qui vivent ensemble. Parce que c'est très volcanique, donc franchement, ça fait des éruptions très souvent.
For Katya and Maurice, the unknown is not something to be feared. It is something to go toward.
Moi, j'aime bien qu'il marche devant moi. Je me décide s'il va se tuer. Je préfère être avec lui, donc.
Normalement, je l'ai réussi mieux que ça, franchement. Hein. Volcan, c'est le plus beau, mais ça tue. Un de mes rêves, c'est que les volcans ne tuent plus.
Katya and Maurice insisted that this type of close-up study had to be done.
Me fait remarquer que nous sommes fous de rester là. Et pourtant, nous restons.
In this world lived a fire, and in this fire, two lovers found a home.
Yeah, so just for context, the film Fire of Love came out last year. It premiered at Sundance. I saw it at Sundance last year. Not in 2023, but I saw it at Sundance 2022. And then I saw it again at True False right after that, which was the first time I got to see it in the theater. And then it got bought by National Geographic at Sundance. And it's just a film that's on a whole other level. It's an archival documentary. It's a poetic documentary. It's like, it's genuinely a cinematic experience first. It's not really concerned too much with the science of volcanoes. It's really concerned about these people, this married couple, their relationship, their love for each other, and their love for volcanoes, which essentially is what they gave their lives together doing, was studying volcanoes. And that's not a spoiler. Obviously, if you know them, you know that they died due to a volcanic blast. I forgot the type of what the type of volcano is called.
It's the gray ones. They switch from like the red volcanoes with the lava to the gray ones with the big explosions, and those are just the deathly ones. Yeah. What's the name? I think I
remember. Yeah. So, but yeah, I agree. I mean, I remember seeing, because all the footage in the film is filmed by Maurice Kraft. And he would say he's not a filmmaker, but I've argued since I've seen it that he's one of the greatest filmmakers, because the ability of the way he blocks shots, the images feel alive. And it's not just because they're volcanoes, but it's because like he knows where to put a camera and he's telling a story with the imagery. And this film really is about images, which I find really fascinating. And there's a voiceover by Miranda July that I think, I just love Miranda July. I mean, I don't know. When I saw that she was doing it, I was like, oh, this is going to like have a strange kind of surrealist feeling to it. And I really think that they captured that.
Going back to like how it was, as you mentioned, like about their love for each other and volcanoes, like my biggest takeaway, I think, was it actually is a love story that like two such unique people found each other. And then also found something that they both had like such an extreme passion for. And there even is in the film like some animation kind of describing how they both were born in different places but brought together. It isn't a spoiler alert, unfortunately, that they do die doing what they love. But it's interesting. You find out kind of like within the first 10 minutes that they will die by a volcanic eruption. And it kind of takes the like that suspense and idea of death off the table. So instead of like anticipating, is this the volcano where it's going to happen? Is this when it's going to happen? You just get to kind of enjoy the story and how much they love each other in life. And then when it happens, it's not like this big, upsetting, shocking moment. I think it gives more space to the rest of the film by putting that in the beginning.
Yeah, I think it's a really loving film. Like I know the word love is in the title, and that's kind of the thesis. I mean, one of the only critiques from someone who I was having a discussion with at True False last year, I remember somebody specifically critiquing the fact that the film says its thesis out loud in it. But I think that that's part of the charm of the film, is like, they're not trying to surprise you with anything. It's like, they're not spoon feeding you anything either. Like, you have room to kind of like come to your own conclusions. But I feel like, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a weird balancing act, and it really plays out more like a narrative film than it does a documentary, which, you know, I think is a compliment for the most part when you're making a film like this.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, to the balancing point, like it is hard to sort of combine the sciences and the arts, but I think when done well, they like just in any aspect, they mix so well together. And this film, I think, does the best at bringing out, or does well about bringing out the best of it. And like, kind of like, I can never say the word bring it in harmony in a way. Cause like in my past, I've loved like math and sciences, but then love film. And often it's like, well, how do you mix the two? And I think this film does a really good job. And I'd say, I feel like I almost learned a little bit more about volcanoes on this one than in Herzog's documentary, because I didn't feel like too inundated with like all this information. Like, I felt like I could see why someone would want to study it, like what it looked like, sort of the dangers. I learned about the different types of volcanoes. I mean, I'd learned that in high school, but didn't really retain much of that. But I liked, yeah, how it wasn't just like facts on facts.
Absolutely. I mean, that's generally what I like in a documentary, is one that kind of, sometimes it's nice to get into the weeds and to really like make something that dives deeply into a subject, but it's hard to do that in a feature film. I feel like you know, Ken Burns does that well. He'll dive into a subject and really get in the weeds and find all the people and the history and the, that's like a whole different type of filmmaking. And to me, whenever I went to go see this film, this is the film I wanted to see. I wanted to see something that felt like I could just live in it. It was emotionally affecting, but also kind of relaxing to watch. It was engrossing, I guess. Maybe not relaxing is a bad word, but it was engrossing. Like I felt like wrapped up in it. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the technical parts too, just because the film is so beautiful and the sound design is incredible. The sound design, the music, the voiceover, everything really plays together to make a really fully realized piece. It feels like it I don't know, it feels,
it's kind of like move, not, yeah, it all like works together so well, and nothing feels like it's pulling you're like, it's almost feels like you're not being distracted by some element. Like sometimes in a film it's like, oh, the sound or the dialogue or this image, like it all just is very cohesive. So you're not, I guess you're not distracted, which I like.
Yeah. I mean, it really feels like a warm blanket in a lot of ways. I mean, it feels like, it feels cozy. Like it's heavy. There's sad parts to it, you know, just like anything in life. But it starts with the sad parts and then it lets you kind of just like live and celebrate their lives. You know, what most people in their kind of position would probably want for the ones around them. You know, they died doing what they loved. And so, although that's like horror, they died in a very horrifying way. I think that the film feels like a celebration of the work they did and the lives that they lived and their love for each other.
Yeah, because I do think it is. Yeah, it's funny. It's a film about, in the end, two people die, but it does have a, like, as you said, warm and fuzzy feeling. And I guess people could say it's cheesy, but I don't think so. Like I ended up writing down a lot of quotes and like now looking at them, I'm like, okay, that is a little cliche, but the fact that you have, you know, people who are so adventurous sort of saying these things and living them and just kind of have like a little quirky personality, like I find it like incredibly believable. Cause yeah, even at one point he even admits, he's like, it'll kill me one day, but I don't care. And then this idea that like, I prefer an intense short life versus a long monotonous one. Like that sometimes is just like a good thing personally to hear as well. And sometimes you hear people say it, but in this film, like seeing people actually living that way and getting a lot out of it, I don't know, it just seems like very like heartwarming and inspiring.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of people say that they want like that short, like, intense life, and then they never do anything about it, and they were actually out there doing these things and they were not sitting on the sidelines watching life happen. And I think that's like such a compliment to them. And I think that there's critiques that, you know, they about them as people and putting themselves in danger and but, you know, who's to say? I don't know. Somebody's going to disagree.
They never put others in danger, which I think is really interesting. And I liked the shift in the film because at the beginning it seemed a little like not selfish what they were doing, but the research was about themselves and sort of them filming and like excitement and exploring. And it didn't seem like a ton was being done with their research. But after they switched over to like the gray volcanoes, I don't remember what country they were in, but they ended up going and like a whole thousands of people, I think, ended up dying. Villages were destroyed. And then they ended up shifting their research to help cities and countries with like evacuation plans. So I do like that we got to see like how their work has helped other people and not just like a passion project or a smart passion project.
I'm curious too. I mean, not curious, but it's also like dawning on me that one of my other top 10 films of the year that I actually had to, that I saw late, I saw it maybe like a month ago. So I had to move it back onto my 2022 list. is another National Geographic film, was The Territory. And I'm like, man, National Geographic is like putting out really interesting work right now.
Oh, all like the National Geographic films, whether they produce them or buy them, are visually stunning. Like, just some of the best footage.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am curious to talk a little bit about the Herzog film, Into the Inferno. It's a very, very different film.
The sun dimmeth, the land sinketh, gushed forth steam and gutting fire. To the heavens soar the hurtling flames of the mighty gods, the engulfing doom. It is hard to take your eyes off the fire that burns deep under our feet.
This was a monstrous volcanic eruption, one of the largest in all of Earth history.
Obviously, there was a scientific side to our journey, but what we were really chasing was a magical side, no matter how strange things might eventually get. It is a fire that wants to burst forth, and it could not care less about what we are doing up here.
This volcano will destroy this world.
The only reason why I really brought it up to rewatch this is because I know you have a complicated relationship with Herzog, and I felt like this was one of the better Herzog films of late, and it is the first time I ever saw Maurice and Katya's footage. They have a very, very small part in the film, specifically when they're talking about gray volcanoes again, but you know, it's in a very different context. But I do remember that footage, that being like some of the most stunning footage in that whole film, was Maurice's footage, and that was the first time I ever saw it, was in the Herzog film.
Do they get barely any credit for that or mentioning? And that kind of, as someone who's already very biased, I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's interesting, because the funny thing is I remember in my head, I had this like idea in my head that Herzog was very critical of them for getting too close to volcanoes or something like that. But then like he didn't, but then I rewatched it and I was like, yeah, wait, he didn't actually even say that, or there's nothing about that in the film. And I think that I was just like taking one of Herzog's personality quirks and just imposing it on him.
I think they're like fundamentally such different people. Because, like, the last thing, okay, I'll try to stop talking about Fire of Love, but, you know, I have too many quotes about it, but...
I really don't have that much to say about Into the Inferno.
Yeah, good. So. Mine are all kind of negative, so this is better. So, like, Maurice ends up saying, like, I actually am a filmmaker. He says, I make films to wander. And I feel like, yeah, that film... You can just see from his personality, he wants to learn and is curious about the world, and is very open to it, of like receiving. Whereas I feel like with Herzog and his films, yes, he's curious, but still has to put his own like knowledge and experience with it instead of receiving more. And I'm just wondering if like, yeah, they're very different approaches made Herzog not really want to mention them. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But because, yeah, I mean, Herzog really is, you know, he's imposing his thoughts throughout all of his films. And if you're not attracted to those thoughts, and I know we've kind of talked about this before, especially like in relationship with like Grizzly Man and like other films like that. I know The Family was very critical of Grizzly Man. And I think that I was taking all of Herzog, because Herzog is criticizing, both empathizing and criticizing Timothy Treadwell throughout Grizzly Man. And I think that that's why I implied those thoughts. Like I had this false memory of in my head of Herzog saying something like that about Maurice and Katya. But it's funny that it wasn't even in there, because Herzog has such a strong voice that sometimes it's hard to get past it and into the work itself. Although I did take another Inferno and I did thoroughly enjoy it. I liked getting all the context for the volcanoes, and I love the stuff where, you know, it's really focusing on his scientist friend whose name I'm spacing on right now. So him as well, like, I just love like their conversations and them exploring this world. But the funny thing is right around the same time they did a film for Apple TV Plus called Fireball: Visitors from a Darker World about meteors. And I felt like it took what they were trying to do with Into the Inferno and really like nailed it, because they get into like the mythology of like of some native people with their rituals and stuff like that about meteors. And then they get into like questions with like scientists for the Catholic Church about meteors and just like all this stuff, and really like exploring it. And both of these films came out around the same time. So I thought it was worth highlighting, because I think that Into the Inferno and Fireball are just such beautiful explorations from Herzog. I do love the way the camera wanders through all these conversations he has with people. But his voice is very present. It's a very different style of filmmaking than what Fire of Love is doing. But I think it was interesting to be taken out of the romance a little bit and looking at kind of the darker side of volcanoes, you know, which I think that Herzog really does. Like, there's like a very scary, dark side of it that he explores a lot as well. Whereas Fire of Love is just such like a beautiful love story and romance story that can almost romanticize this like this deadly force, you know. So I thought it was like an interesting counterbalance, is all.
Yeah, I would say like I should see that other Herzog film, because the elements I did like about Into the Inferno sound like they're a part of that the Apple one. I will say this film started off a little less Herzog-y for me in a way. Like he didn't seem too overly present. Eventually that came back, and that's kind of when I tend to disengage with his films. But I do like how he focused sort of on like this like godly, like insanely powerful force that are, like that volcanoes are, and they're so uncontrollable. And I think he did that very well with like a lot of this like almost like church hymnal style music. And like you said, like those wider shots and just showing like how destructive and powerful volcanoes were. And because I think of that music and imagery, I didn't need his voice. Like once that narration started, I think like a quarter of the way in, I was like, you're already doing it with the other elements. I didn't feel like it was needed. And yeah, there was some mythology from the different, I don't remember what island they were on, but there was that tribe and there was the leader kind of talking about how they had their own god, and he would go to the volcano and he would sleep and he would meet them. But the problem I had with that conversation was like, I think he was talking with like Clive Oppenheimer, that he kept interrupting him. I was like, I just want to hear like this man speak. This is his experience. It's like much different than anything a scientist has probably studied. Like, I feel like there was a little bit too much interrupting. And I feel like Clive Oppenheimer did fit that like kind of quirky, funny scientist and didn't seem judgmental. But there was another moment, like just as a woman, it kind of bothered me, where they were, let's see if I can figure out where it was. But there was like a woman scientist who would like establish this sort of system in a town so they could predict sort of earthquakes and volcanoes happening. And he just starts explaining the system to her and asking like, well, this is how it should be done sort of thing. And that's what kind of made me be a little bit over the film at that point. But yeah, there's definitely so many good elements in his films, and they are so well like researched, and he's in these places. I just wish he would let the place and the place's people tell the story versus
I mean, Grizzly Man could have been you could see Grizzly Man as like an archival exploration similar to this film, you know, but whenever you get Herzog's narration, you're kind of getting his opinions about this guy. And for me, like, sometimes I find those to be kind of fascinating. Like, I find his narration to be fascinating and like something that every now and then, depending, I mean, I like a good chunk of his films. So, I mean, it's something that I enjoy, but I totally understand like seeing where you're coming from with like, especially that scientist, whenever he starts explaining things to a scientist.
Oh, there was one.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I just, because I was looking through my notes, there was one really good segment, which I think they kind of let that unfold in a good way, is when they're in East Africa and they meet that archaeologist and they're doing that. They're doing like a massive dig. And then there's this guy, his name's like Dr. Yonatan. I don't know if I'm saying that right. He's Ethiopian. And the other people on the dig who are like, from the States or other part of like the Western world are just giving him so much credit, as in like he finds everything. And then you just start to hear like this man speak, and he kind of has that same like love and drive for what he does as like Katya and Maurice do. Like, he's just like obsessed with archaeology and volcanoes. And then it would shift back to more of the general style. And I was like, oh, I wish we could see more of him. So I think, yeah, a lot of my opinions are just based off of what my film preferences are. And yeah, I purposely did watch Into the Inferno first when I rewatched these, because I was like, I know if I watch Fire of Love first, it's just going to be an uphill battle to get through Into the Inferno in a non-negative way.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And I think that's like, I think that's one of the things that we could talk about in the greater scheme of filmmaking. Like, you know, like somebody like Michael Moore or Herzog or Morgan Spurlock or, you know, a lot of these filmmakers. I mean, you could even go back to like Agnes Varda, somebody who I love that she does this, you know, because it's always in such a playful, humble way, it feels like. But if you're putting so much of yourself in a film, then it's really going to be like, it could, I mean, you have the risk there of the film being about you and not being about the subject matter, which is a choice, you know, and for better or worse, because obviously Michael Moore is still the highest grossing documentary filmmaker of all time, but now he's like very hated and he can barely get a film made. So, you know, that's always the risk, because if you're putting yourself in your films like that, then you're going to be bound with the whims of fame or opinions about the way you talk about things. Whereas, like, for me, like, generally, most of the films that I love and that I want to make, I get out of the way completely. And I just almost completely, sometimes you can hear my voice or something like that, but I really try to make the films about what I'm making a film about. And those are a lot of times the films that I love, like Frederick Weissman or the Maisel brothers or Chantal Ackerman a lot of times, although Chantal Ackerman puts herself a lot in her films as well, actually. But Rachel Grady, Heidi Ewing, like a lot of the Verite and stuff like that. And also like Fire of Love, like there's a discernible directorial voice here. There's a discernible thesis, there's a discernible visual language, style of filmmaking. The director is very present, but in a very different way. She's present in her filmmaking. And Herzog has that too. He the way he shoots interviews, I love. I love whenever he lets the camera linger too long. I love that he doesn't like sit people down and put four cameras on them with lights. Like a lot of times his interviews are like out in the field, people are standing. He does very,
see, I didn't like that.
You what? You don't like that?
Normally they're fine. I just keep remembering the standing shot of Clive. It did bring out how awkward he kind of is, but it bothered me. Like I got so distracted. Yeah. Like I agree. I don't like the sit down three camera or, you know, three lights, whatever. Someone should be in there, like, however they feel most, like, comfortable and natural. But That one standing shot, I actually took a note how much it was distracting. That's
funny. Yeah, see, I mean, I like those, like, awkward. I like yeah. whenever he captures the... I think that at the same time, he's showing the awkwardness of interviewing people for a film and how awkward being yeah. in a film is and that you're watching a film. And I think that that's what I do like about his narration. A lot of times he's just pointing out that you're watching someone's opinion and it's his opinion. And this is like, you know, this is part of it. So I think that there's value in both of it, in both styles of film. Cause I mm-hmm. love both of these films. Fire of Love was a particular type of love though this year that came from a whole different level. It's a completely different experience. But yeah, I thought it would be interesting to just talk about both because they're so different. And
it's such different filmmaking as well. And I like that, yeah, you can have the exact same subject and just two different experiences, like completely different experiences.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see Herzog do a film where he didn't do. I think he has a couple films. Oh, like Happy People. I think he barely does any narration. There's like, it would be interesting to see him do a film with no narration because I still feel like he has a very strong filmmaking style. I remember seeing the way he shoots, like the way cameras roam through his film for some reason feels different than anyone else. And like, I could point out a Herzog film just from the way it was shot, even without his voice. But it's.
I think he kind of captures like almost like the grandness and the uncontrollable like energy of yeah. the world. That he's powerful, but then he's like, okay, yes, I know all this and I'm powerful, but our world and universe is even kind of bigger and grander than what we understand. And his camera work is incredible at showing yeah. that. And that's why I'm like, because that's so good. Just, you don't need the rest of it.
He does have like there is a certain type of pessimism. Like he definitely has a wonder for the world. He definitely is interested in the world. He's interested in people, but there's also like a pessimism in all of his films. Like there's a...
Well, he's German. I think some of yeah. it is. It's the, not in a negative yeah. way, but it's...
There's definitely like a focus yeah. on kind of the darkness. Like Fire of Love makes volcanoes look magical in a way, and Herzog takes a volcano and he's like, yeah, it's magical, but it'll kill you and it's horrible and it's a dangerous thing. And it's really interesting because I feel like he did that with Grizzly Man. He's like, I'm interested in this guy, there's something beautiful about his like love for these animals, but at the same time they're gonna eat you, they don't love you the way you love them. Mm-hmm. So I think that I don't even know if maybe it's a pessimism or maybe it's like a hard realism. Like it's a hard look at like, yeah, there's beauty in these things, but they're also like everything is out to kill you. And at some point you're going to yeah. die from something.
I was going to say, yeah, similarly like that, death is always present. That's what you kind of feel like. It's, you could be sitting and having breakfast, but death, like it's always there. And then you put yourself in these more heightened situations and you do feel it. And he likes to explore that, which creates some like intensity, you yeah. know.
But there's even a book that I read where he wrote and he walked across like Germany, and it's called like Walking on Ice or something like that. I'll look up the title and insert it here. But yeah, he wrote this book about going on this like long, long walk. And I remember it's like this weird mix of like, it's so Herzogian where he's like talking about the wonder of going on this long walk because he decides to walk to his friend who's dying. And it's a true story. His friend is dying. He puts everything away, grabs like a notebook, and just decides he's going to walk to the town. And it took him like weeks of walking. And then he wrote this book about it. And it's such a weird mix of like the wonder of humanity, some people's kindness, but also just like the danger like lurking and like things that are out to like kill you and some of the pessimism. And it's really interesting that he has this like fascination with that.
It's
even Happy People. I mean, it's about how hard it is to like live. And there's like some beauty to it about people living off the grid and this like, you know, vast, you know, nothingness of Siberia. And but yet, you know, it's also like insanely dark and gritty and scary at the same time. So I'll recommend both of these films to everyone. I say watch both of them. Fire of Love and Into the Inferno will be very different experiences, but I think they're both experiences worth having.
Yes, and I'd say maybe time between them, because it's
not back to back.
Not back to back, or unless you do, not in a negative way, but unless you do like Into the Inferno first, because I think it's hard to compare, not even just that film, but it's hard to compare, I think, a lot of the documentaries I've seen in the last couple of years to Fire of Love.
Well, I guess that does it for this episode of On, the first episode in years of On Documentary.
Yes, we're back.
We are back. I don't know how often we'll be back. I'm not going to make any promises right now, but we're back.
Yeah.
And we appreciate you for listening. I still own a documentarycompany.com. Go there for any information. You can message us with thoughts, recommendations. Tell us what you're watching.
Yeah, I'd love recommendations, because I'm trying to get back into documentaries, and I do too much scrolling of what to pick, so recommendations are appreciated.
Just text me next time you want to watch a documentary and I'll force feed you ones.